the ADVFN podcast with Justin Wade.
Welcome to the ADVFN podcast, episode 262. On the podcast today, trainer, teacher, technical analyst Francis Hunt, otherwise known as the Market Sniper, charts BG Group, MX All, and MoneySupermarket.com. Plus, he has his thoughts on gold and a couple of other things as well. Plus, have the macro news, no broker forecast today. Yeah, it's a Friday. They don't work on a Friday, brokers. No, look, in too much money. Why should they work a 5-day week? Four, plenty. But first, I got an email from Mark. By all means, email me, podcast@advfn.com. And Mark says, "Hi, Justin. I've been following you for a while, and I agree with 99% of what you say." That's amazing. Do you know what? Even I don't agree with that, what I say most of the time. So that's quite good. And I'm living with a lady who doesn't agree with me pretty much 10% of the time. So, Mark, if you want to move in, you can anytime you want to, fella. Because I think me and you'll get on like a house on fire as long as you agree with me 99% of the time. Perfect. Anyway, Mark says, "I just thought I would let you know that cutting portfolio down," because I mentioned this, I want to cut my portfolio down. I held about 25 stocks, I think closer to 30 at one point, but 4 months ago. And I'm trying to cut this down to closer to 10, between 10 and 20. But anyway, Mark says, "Just thought I would let you know that cutting portfolio down and therefore less diversity is a dangerous move. I understand that you probably invest better than the average person, but it's probably better to suggest to others that the smart thing to do is have around 20 shares to reduce exposure. Anyway, use it, don't use it, but still loving the podcast, so keep it up. P.S. Nice day for Shell. In fact, this was yesterday when Shell was the biggest riser on the FTSE 100. I, like you, believe in them, but they are only 7% of my portfolio. You will probably win this one. What percentage does it make up of yours?" Right, before I tell you what percentage Shell makes up of my portfolio, this is what I'm going to say. Diversifying is very good. You should diversify, definitely. But you've got to think, what am I diversifying against or for? Because you can, you know, just diversifying for the sake of it is not a smart thing to do. But what you are doing, hopefully, when you diversify, is diversifying against risk. And that's all it's about, risk versus reward. And generally, you know, if you're taking on more risk, then hopefully there should be a chance of a better reward. But it doesn't pay off because obviously there's more risk. Now, I do see myself as diversified. I hold 18 stocks, which is, you know, quite a lot. But a quarter of my portfolio at the moment is Royal Dutch Shell. And this is why I still think I'm diversified, because I believe the reward is greater than the risk here. And that's all diversity is about. It's taking on risk and exposing yourself to less risk and hopefully getting some reward there. This is why I think this. After reading the results from Royal Dutch Shell yesterday, the CEO, Ben van Beneden, said that he guarantees the dividend for this year and next year at, you know, where it is at the moment, which is like $1.88, which works out about 120 and 30. It works out about 30 pence a quarter, pretty much, per share. Is guaranteeing that for this year and next year. At the moment, Shell price, share price being where it is, that's 7%. I don't mind if the share price goes down any further. I don't mind that because I, you know, reinvest the proceeds from my dividends. So I'm buying more shares in Shell. So, you know, if the share price goes down, I'm buying more shares, I'm getting more dividends, I'm buying more shares. I genuinely think, if you look at what they also said about cutting the cost of future exploration, which most oil majors are doing, I genuinely think in about 2-3 years' time, it's a long-term investment, that oil, price of oil will go through the roof. That's what I think. The supply will be cut down back, because demand is growing. We know that. I mean, demand at the moment. I mean, we are. I mean, the consumption on daily rate in the worldwide is about 94.5 million, if 95 million barrels a day. That's a consumption rate. But we are producing about 96.5. So it's about a million, almost 2 million in excess supply. So supply is there, storage is at max, and also your output going up. But demand is still growing. All right, it is still growing next year and the year after that because the population is growing. But at this current rate, the barrel of oil, the price of a barrel of oil right now, supply won't continue at all. So you won't get any producers of all stopping shutting down wells right now because it's too expensive to do that. They can't do that. They'll still run that off. They're still making cash. Obviously, they're still turning over cash. They're still getting cash in. And even people who are not breaking even or losing money, they have to service their debts. So they have to keep selling oil at this price. But what it will do, it'll stop people from investing in expensive projects in the future. And that will then cut the supply off. So, I mean, the supply will go down. It may not go down this year, but maybe next year, start of ending next year, it will. And to me, I don't mind if the price of oil goes down to $20, $30 a barrel. That will help in the long run. So that's why I see this right now as a very much a greater reward long-term than risk. I'm happy to sit on the 7% dividend, which is guaranteed from the CEO of Shell for the next 2 years. And see what happens to the oil price. Because I guarantee in the next couple of years' time, in a year's time, what I'm saying is the probability is such that I believe the oil price will be higher this time next year than it is now. Or if not, this time in about 18 months' time. And that's why I think, I've skewed my portfolio hugely, 25% exposure to Shell, because I believe there's a reward there, and I'm diversifying for reward. Not just risk. And I think there's no risk there at the moment at all. What's the risk in having 7% from one of the biggest companies in the world? No risk whatsoever. Share price goes down, dividend grows. So that's my take on it. You have to realise what you're diversifying for. I may be wrong, but listen, hey Mark, you agree with me 99% of the time, yeah? You can't disagree with me there, surely. And you own Shell as well. We're both in agreement there, aren't we? Yes. And joining me on the podcast now is trader, technical analyst and teacher Francis Hunt, otherwise known as the Market Snipe. Are you Market Sniper, I should say, not Snipe. That's a different thing. How are you, Francis?
Very good, Justin. Nice to be with you again this week.
Yeah. Any overall themes or thoughts you have in the market at the moment?
Yes, I do. Nice. Very bearish at the moment, gold. And the commodities generally, it's not a new theme. It's a principle of a reassertion is due again. We were very fortunate on our fund. We're up nigh on 60%. We caught a 1:17.5 risk reward trade on the smash crash on gold. Literally now 10 days ago, I think it was 16. I had it live trading day on the 16th and we were itching for it and we discussed it. We recorded it. We got everybody short. And then Sunday night, we had a massive move on gold and with way ahead of expectations. And I think we got a bit lucky. You make a bit of your luck, but we also did get a bit lucky because we were on the right side of the market. But it I didn't expect it to spill like that. And you may recall it fell from 1160 levels. And we were short just after it first twitched at 1147 with an 1149 stop. And it, we got out at way down at 1080s. So we got effectively $2.50 to $3. We had a number of entries stop with a better part of 40 plus profits on various entries. So we had three or four entries on that. Now, apart from telling you about that legacy-wise, we've not really recovered very well, and we've set up a very interesting continuation pattern on gold. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I say this with some of the heaviest hearts. I believe in trade the paper short and accumulate the physical. You know, there's a lot of gold bugs out there, and in some senses, in terms of fiat currency and quantitative easing policy, I'm an empathizer, and I certainly say you can do better. You can't do much worse than accumulating in these levels. But as far as the markets and the price action is concerned, and this is the key element of remaining technical with your trading when you're using leverage and you're on the shorter time frame, trade it short, accumulate physically for the long game. And that's my view. And if you can see this chart, because we're doing a share this time, and hopefully some of your podcasters can follow, you can see we had the big spill. We had a bit of a snapback rally because it was so extreme. Yeah. And then we drifted all the way back down, and then we've been consolidating again. And it's just accepting a level, you know, well below the 1100s. We're trading 1081 at the moment.
Yeah. And what's that level you're pointing at? It's a level that's bounced off twice. It's there at the moment. What is that level? I can't see the figure.
1080. 1080 is a round number. You know, you're going to find your logical round numbers. Let me make this image as broad as possible.
Yeah.
But 1080 is the key round level. And if I max the size of this chart out, you'll see that we just each low, and this is technically something that should be very interesting for those of your people that are mainly fundamental. It might just give them an extra arrow for their quiver if they consider this option. When you fail to make new lows, but you come very, very close, mm-hmm. it is actually quite bearish for me. In other words, we have had a succession of lows. Each time the market has revisited back down to the previous lows, but we've not quite run the extreme low. So you'll see the secondary low, we ran the 1080 level and then we rallied again. Then we've been very, very tight between 1100, 1090, and now we're starting to slip through the gate and we're coming and visiting 1080 again. But we've not run the extreme low of the sell-off spike that we were fortunate enough to capture on our trading fund.
So you're saying that's bearish, or will it go down
that's
to that
bearish.
The bottom? Okay.
Yes.
So you see gold basically going down further now, and because there's a sort of a physical support level for gold, isn't it? Because I mean, it's not profitable for most people to get it out of the ground, is it? Below 1,200, apparently. Is that the case?
It is to a degree. There's many mines that are falling very, very marginal in terms of cost production. But you don't just switch mines off and back on again.
No, you've got to keep turning cash out.
Like a light switch. Yes. So. And also, you have to consider at what level they've hedged. Many have hedging policies. So the current price may not be reflective of their current profitability, but it's certainly ominous for future hedging and future profitability if they're forced to hedge at lower levels. So, you know, it's a lot of shafts can get mothballed and the business can get shrunk down further. But it isn't over. The key element here is it's not over. I've got another short entry here. You can see up top there that I managed to get in above the 1100s. Mm-hmm. That's in the money with about $21. This is subsequent to our crash there. This is continuation. When you start to get marginally lower lows and you start to get a bit of a rounding bottom, that's when you have to start be more cautious of reversals than you might get an inverted head and shoulder. This kind of holding of a line but barely, and then building up a new, it's creating what many people would consider like a pennant triangle on the downside. We have a bespoke pattern that we actually refer to in here, but it won't mean necessarily a great deal to your audience. But it's a continuation pattern for downside, and most people are too quick to start becoming buyers. And there's just still a bit more juice in this, I'm afraid, for both the gold and the silver. I've looked at the silver charts, equally sick. I've looked at the Australian dollar and some of the commodity currencies. So we're doing intra-market analysis, not looking that strong, looking sick against both the dollar and even the euro and the yen. So Australian dollar looking very weak, New Zealand dollar looking very weak. New Zealand wouldn't be gold strong, but Aussie is, and commodities as a whole. This has been a bit of a lean on all the commodities. So for those of your customers that might have Randgold or, you know, the likes of Glencore, and it's a better short than it is a long at the moment, or stay out.
Yeah, okay. All right, marvellous stuff. Well, let's look on some some stocks. I mean, I've sent you over a couple of stocks. What do you want to go with first, Francis?
Well, interestingly enough, I think you had an energy. So while we're on the commodity theme, let's finish with that. You had BG.
That's right. BG is a takeover target from Royal Dutch Shell. And I think when Royal Dutch Shell was 20 quid, and they're now down to 1860. But when Royal Dutch Shell was 20 quid, there was a basically £13 is what they're offering to buy out the stock. So it's below that at the moment. It's about £10, isn't it? So it's below that. So people could you know, but it's gone down a little bit now. But it's a very messy chart, isn't it, BG? The results chart today, they've 65% down profit, down because of the oil price. But, they've been taking over. So what do you think of this chart? It's like I say, it's quite messy there, isn't it?
Yes, I'm looking at the 1 week chart and the monthly to try and get a macro feel. The much longer run was actually quite bullish if you look at the monthly from periods gone by. But since then, since the top out in 11, you know, it's just been generally a pretty ugly chart, making new lows. But in a Dow theory kind of way, so you had higher high, higher low, higher. Lower high, lower low. And then we had this big spike that I think you're referring to. It may have been even on the results, quite a big gap. And possibly because they prepared the market so well for them being bad, it may have almost been a bit of a relief rally when it turned out not so bad. So the daily chart has that big, big gap, but then it's easing off again when you have a big,
that,
big
no, gap. That was the offer from Roll Dutch Shell. That was the offer that came in from Roll Dutch Shell. So that's why it spiked up, yeah.
Right, so that was recently. You're ahead of the new, me on the news, having just been away for a while. So when were results?
Results today as well. Quarterly results today, yes, but that was, let's look at the date of that. Yeah, April 15th was when they, Roll Dutch Shell announced the takeover bid for them. And they, like I said, they popped from £9 up to £13, and that was basically the offer price, as you can see. Yes. But now the, and it's part cash, part shares in Roll Dutch Shell, but because Roll Dutch Shell shares have gone down a bit now, the offer's diluted a bit. So they've come down, they've grinded down, haven't they, about £10, bounced off that. And now they're just under £11. But the results are out today, quarterly results. And they are 68% profits down, but it's down to the oil price. But like I said, they are a bit takeover target.
Yes, they have drifted from that 13, but it's a very contained drift. It's not it's not sold off exceptionally hard, so maybe there's still some hope. The price action would imply to me that there's still some hope of maybe another offer, but maybe that the offer might not be as strong as before. In other words, that maybe the acquisition could be done at the same level, possibly a little bit cheaper. I don't know how the shareholders would feel about that, but there was a little bit of a gap and trading up nicely now, up to the 1100. The 1100 seems to be an interesting level. It's sort of dipped below it, tried to come back to it.
Ah, well, that's interesting. So the gap yesterday, the reason why there was a gap yesterday is because Roll Dutch Shell results were out, and their results came in better than expected, even though they were like half of what they were this time last year because of the oil. And of course, because Roll Dutch Shell are taking these over in part cash, part share offer, there was a gap up because Roll Dutch Shell shares were top of the FTSE 100 rises yesterday. So they're up 5% yesterday, Roll Dutch Shell. They're a bidder. So it's obviously on that good news. They went up too in sympathy with them, really.
Yeah, charting wise, I can't really give you a great deal, and you're better versed than me in terms of the ebb and flow of the offers. I remember when it first came out, but it's just had a benign drift since the original possible mooting of the 13. So it's not a brutal sell off. So the suggestion, if we're trying to tie this to the narrative, is that there's still some optimism out there for the deal, if it's not yet confirmed.
Yeah, do you use, when you look at the charts, do you use moving averages, Francis, or not? Or just look price action?
Price action is the most important thing, and volume.
So
volume, when we have a look at your exploration MX oil stock.
Yeah, let's go to MX oil next thing, because that's the other end of the spectrum as far as market cap. It's very popular with private investors, and it's basically, you know, Mexico opening up their the oil fields, which was closed before to international companies, but now they're opening that up, and one of the first players there, MX Oil, and so they've got a, you know, a nice bite, a good potential there. Like I said, they're well favoured by lots of private investors, and it's only 3.45p at the moment, because it's a penny stock. People get they fall in love with penny stocks. They think they can earn millions overnight. That's the trouble, but more often than not, you don't. You lose lots. But yeah, so let's look at the prices. It's below 2p back in January, and it's sort of rallied up, kicked through the 200-day moving average up to 5p, so it's more than doubled, and I was come back to 3.45p. So what do you think? I mean, it looks like a nice support level there. I can see it on the 3p, which is also coincidentally 200-day moving average. What do you think?
There's a, what I tend to call, a bit of a grind line under it from its lows in February, sort of January, February, that's have now just been broken. So there was a kind of drift buying of this stock coming under it, with occasional pops to the upside, then returning to this drift line. If you can see the line, I'm sort of drawing from the lows January all the way through to the 4.25 level, and we've slipped through that now for the first time. So I'm wondering if the overall bearishness on oil is eventually overroaring the potential the drift buying that has been coming in under the stock, and people think, well, maybe we can acquire it on a little cheaper. The last time we had significant volume, really significant volume, was May going on June, mid-May going on June, after a sell-off from five. So there were a number of sell-offs on from that level, and that may have been once again specific to the market. We may have to just see what oil was doing simultaneous to that, or whether that was new specific. As a general whole, I think you're going to get better opportunities to acquire it cheaper than buying now, just with this grind line being broken to the downside. It just means that drift buyers have been taken out by the sellers for now, so there might be a few of them just nursing a little bit of negative equity, so they're more likely to distribute than to get aggressively buying again. At the 3.5, you may get a little rally back up to the 4 first before it eases again. But I think this is going to be probably, you've got a point to the oil, and gold and oil are bearish for me. So I think there's going to be opportunities to acquire this penny stock lower down.
Marvelous stuff.
Patient, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's move away from energy here. Let's move into sort of online retail, it's a money supermarket comparison site. In fact, they went down today because do you know Martin Lewis? Have you heard of him?
I've heard his name. Yes.
Yeah, he's money. He's a money saving expert. But they bought his site, Money Saving Expert, and he's just now taking the option. I think he had to stay with them for 2 years, I think, or 18 months before he could sell any shares, and he's just pocketed 25 million quid in shares. So, but the results are out, and because of that sell-off, 9%, I think, of the company, they dropped down a little bit today. But, they've been rallying, haven't they? All the way from October last year, pretty much. They've gone from, where were they at there? That's 190, or up to 3 quid. I know they bumped their head on that 3 quid, they'd come back a little bit,
Well, I've got something interesting to tell you about that, because if people are prepared to look at their charts on Money Supermarket while they're watching this, I've got the weekly charts for those that are following, and this whole move up from 2011 through 12 that peaked roughly first third of 2013, probably April, May, and that was when it peaked out, just through the 220s.
Yeah.
And then had quite an abrupt, this is a head and shoulders that you can see during that period. So that was your shoulder, head, and then another shoulder, and then you broke, and that neckline was your 180 mark. And often you'll find internal directors and key points for, you've just mentioned share options for big directors, and £25 million is obviously fairly considerable. You will always find a lot of key levels show up in the patterns. So the 180 is your neckline. You can see that horizontal 180 and that head and shoulders topping at 220. So for those looking at the chart, so you should have had a pullback there of 40p. So from your 180 all the way down, and there you go, just stopping before the 140 down there on your head and shoulders target. So that's just taking order. But why are we looking at this, and why is it relevant to now? Well, this then gave you a secondary impulse. That gave you a secondary high just through the £2 level and back down to the 160. So you can see that this was all setting up what many may recognize as a symmetrical triangle if they've got some sort of technical background. And we trade a subset of that, and we take out the third high. So the third high was here and the low was there. So you would have bought at this price point over here in and around 195 with a stop loss at 175. And your target would have been a very incredible. Remember, we fell from 220 through 220 all the way down to 140. So that loss is 80 pence. So you would have targeted 80 pence from your 190 level, which gives you 270 as a target. So you would have captured that whole move trading all the way up here through 270. So a really big multi-annual triangular pattern has recently, in the beginning of this year, around about the end of Q1, made target. And since then, it's got quite choppy. So we always say technically that, and we experience this on price behavior, that post a big macro target being made, there's a lot of what I call progress decay. That means you churn, you chop, you can often pull back, but there's not necessarily much more upside performance for the time that you spend in market. And remember, time in market is risk. So the best part of the move is this quick breakout move that you would have got when you ran the 195s and you went for a straight out sprint for the 270. You should always run through a target, which is exactly what happened. But since then, you know, you exhausted just shy of 310, then you gave it all back to 270. These are wild swings now. And for anybody using leverage, certainly I would say it's not a time to be in the market, because you end up getting shaken out in the pain, not staying for the greed. People that are holding as investors and that have a very long time frame and maybe feel very positively disposed will be tempted to want to hold on because of the trend and the gifts that shares given you. But I would say this would be quite a dull period now for gains for Money Supermarket. However, the corollary to that is once that's been shaken off and worked out through the system, which may require a few pullbacks and a bit of churn, then it's the overall theme is you've got a big part target that's been met and it's performed to that. And in the longer run, if you're holding, you're talking multi-year strategy, you know, that's a positive sign to meet an upside target. It's not a bearish sign. But for the next 6 months or so, it could be a bit dull.
Yeah, consolidation. Okay, marvellous. All right, well, that's BG, MX Oil, and Money Supermarket there. Francis, thanks for joining me on the podcast. Where can people follow you?
Yes, thanks for that. I've got we're running a 12 by Sunday sessions, and it's kind of like a webinar series where we're introducing the Hunt Volatility Funnel Theory, which would have you would have captured it as this breakout move. I've got a couple of long-termers just like Money Supermarkets that are well in way, like Carnival. I think I've spoken to you before on previous podcasts. People can come and get the event. I'll send you the link following this podcast. And we've got the recordings for the first two, and I've added a bonus one. So you're getting most, you'll get the whole series. And also, we're going to have our next trading day. We were very fortunate. We've all jumped into the shorts. We were very lucky on the 16th of July, the last one. But that was awesome. So positioning ourselves on the right side of the market, utilizing theory, getting a tight stop and looking for a big reward. And high risk reward trading is the name of the game for me. So I'll send a link for both the trading day, which is coming up August the 31st, and also anybody who would like to get involved with the 12 by Sunday sessions.
Marvelous. And one more question, Francis. What are you opening at the moment? What trades have you got on at the moment? What are you looking at the most?
Very, very interested in the gold shorts.
Yeah.
Australian dollar is still short on the Aussie against the yen at the moment. And there's, for the equity boys, the AA, one I didn't get a chance to put to you. It's a small cap, but it's your, you know, your automobile association. It's a sell down through the 345 mark for me as well. Okay. It's already broken. So another little tip in there.
Marvellous. Francis, as ever, lovely to speak to you.
Good day and thank you.
It's time for the micro macro news. Here's the macro news. Inflation in the Eurozone held steady in July as falling energy prices offset rises in industrial goods. The annual inflation rate stayed at 0.2% according to the flash estimate from the EU's statistics agency Eurostat. Energy prices fell 5.6%. But the Eurostat also said that unemployment rate was unchanged at 11.1% in June for the third month. The International Monetary Fund, or the IMF, sounds like a pop band, doesn't it? Is very wary of any financial contribution to a third Greek bailout. What? I thought this had been agreed, sort of, haven't it? We're not going back there again, surely. The implication of remarks by an IMF official is that it's very unlikely to provide funds at the first stage. The fund could, however, join in later, provided both the Eurozone and Athens take steps to address the IMF concerns. The IMF believe the elements so far agreed are not enough to make the Greek government's debt sustainable. I know, because it's going to be over 200% of GDP apparently, and the only country with that kind of level of GDP debt is Japan, I think, at the moment. I think China in a close, yeah, but anyway. Mainland Chinese shares ended July with their biggest monthly loss in 6 years, nearly. The Shanghai Composite Index closed down 1.1% today, that is, at 3664, losing 10% over the week and more than 14% for the month. The government took further action to calm the markets on Friday with a crackdown on automated trading. It restricted 24 trading accounts in which it detected what it called abnormal bids, moves it described as malicious selling. That's funny. Well, basically, you can't sell. You're not allowed to sell. So if you do sell, you're in trouble. You're not allowed to sell. You must buy, fine, buying's good. No sales. That's how the Chinese authorities are playing it. That's cracking. And here's the micro news. Here's the good news. Lloyds Bank Group posted a 38% increase in pre-tax profits, but set aside a further $1.4 billion for PPI mis-selling. International Consolidated Airlines beat profits forecast for the second quarter as British Airways and Iberia owner enjoyed a 5.6% increase in passengers. JD Sports expects a full-year profit to be 10% ahead of current market forecasts. Apparently, current forecast of £110 million is trading in the first half of the year continued to be strong. Colt reported 7.6% lift in group half first earnings. Essentra reported a decline in interim profits on the back of exceptional costs, although revenue soared following the acquisition of Clondalkin Specialist Packaging. And Allant said net sales increased by 1.9% for the first half of the year, reflecting end market headwinds. And managed services and staffing company Impellum Group posted an increase in interim profit driven by a sharp hike in revenue. Here's the bad news. BP has reported a 64% slump quarterly profits as the new low oil price and fallout from the 2010 Gulf of Mexico oil spill continue to dent its takings. MoneySupermarket.com, with chatting with Francis, group shares were down almost after personal finance commentator Martin Lewis trousered 25 million from the sale of 9 million shares. Trousered. That word is a tabloid word, isn't it? He trousered 25 million beans. Anyway, it's like Martin Lewis. Whoa, money saving expert. Yeah, money making expert as well. BG Group posted a 65% slump. That's going right, isn't it? Look at BP and BG. 65% slump in second quarter revenue and income. That seems to be the take on it, doesn't it? But around about that level, just over half. Or two-thirds almost. Posted in second quarter net income on the back of declining oil prices, although the figures still came in ahead of analyst expectations. Sales at IMI declined more than expected in the first 6 months of the year as its markets continue to provide challenging backdrop with tentative warning about full-year orders. UBM posted a 37.2% decline in first-half pre-tax profits and said it was confident of meeting full-year expectations. What? She posted a 37% decline in first-half profits, but are confident of meeting full-year expectations. Yeah, we're confident of losing more money in the full term as well. Yeah, we will double that loss. Yeah, we're very confident that. Yeah, we can do that. We'll lose about 100% of our money in this first year. No problem at all. Vedanta Resources posted a drop in first quarter earnings and revenue, weighted by a decline in commodity prices, particularly oil. Vesuvius reported a decline in interim pre-tax profits due to a decline in global steel output and inventory volumes, which dragged revenue lower in the first half. Textile services group Berendsen said with a weakening euro hit its interim profit and revenue. And Afren, the worst news of all, which suspended its shares in July amid uncertainty over its financial position, has been placed into administration as it failed to agree a refinancing with its PIMCO-led group of lenders. There's a lot of bad news there, isn't it? It's mostly commodity oil exposed. That's why I think right now we're at the bottom of the market, you know? That's why I quite like Shell. I think it's all reward, no risk. By the way, there's no broker forecast today because the brokers don't work on a Friday because they earn too much money. That's it from the podcast. There's another one tomorrow, the evening podcast with Pete and Steve, or the weekend podcast, I should say. Not the evening podcast. You can listen when you want, essentially. But listen, get in contact. podcast@advfn.com on email. If you've got a spare few minutes, go to iTunes and give me a rating and review. If you go to sharepickers.com, you can click the link from there and it'll take you through to iTunes and just write a review. And 5 stars, please, and I will dedicate the podcast to you. Don't forget, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on the podcast, as it's only just opinion. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.